This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to another very special edition of the Blue Monday podcast. I'm Craig Fimbo and joining me is an Ipswich Town legend twice over. I'm delighted to welcome a man who not only finds himself fifth in the list of highest ever appearance makers for Ipswich Town, he also managed the third most matches in our history. A very, very warm welcome to George Burley. George, how are you going?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, enjoying a nice sunny morning. Just walked the dog, so I'm all room to go.
Perfect. So the plan is, given your length of service, that we'll have a chat about your playing career and then about your managerial career afterwards, if that's okay.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So, well, where do we start then? 1972, do we start in?
71.
That's when you came down and joined Ipswich, was it? And yes. How on earth did that come about?
Well, I mean, we'll go and talk more about Sir Bobby as time goes on with the interview. But, Sir Bobby put a sort of plan ahead of his time to try and bring players, young players from all over the country. And that was Scotland as well, Scotland, the North East, the Midlands, everywhere, really. And they organised trials near my home place in Cumnock. Which actually is near Glenbuck. If anybody's seen the programme at Glenbuck at Netflix about Liverpool and Bill Shankly, I lived near there. So there was trials and I was did okay, and they invited me down. I think it was Easter, me and a number of other Scottish lads. So we played trials, and after that trial I was lucky enough to been invited to sign an apprenticeship. So it was a big decision. So the trials, I was only 14. I played Scottish schoolboys, and I had a few offers from local clubs like Ayr United and Kilmarnock, where I lived. So it was something I had to think about. There was another boy called Kenny Taylor, same age, and he was from Salkett's in Ayrshire as well. And he was invited. So I spoke to my parents. They were keen for me to stay on at school and try and progress, but they knew I wanted to do it and they felt that they couldn't stand in my way. So myself and Kenny Taylor signed, and we were the two first ever Scottish boys to sign apprenticeship for Ipswich. And then that was at the age of 15. I was 15 and 3rd of June, and I think I came to Ipswich on about the 25th of June, 1971.
Wow.
Seems a long time ago, and it was a big decision, but it was one I never regretted.
But so then presumably you had to live in digs and had the life of an apprentice, basically. So what were you well looked after in those days?
Yeah. Ipswich was under Sir Bobby, and the club and the Kobolds was such a family club. And there was other youngsters there from all over the country. And we're a very tight bond. Ipswich is a very vibrant place, and very friendly. and we all played, and we played in the southeast counties, where the Astra pitch is now. In the mornings, we used to get good crowds, and we had a very good team. So it was very, great coaches, Cyril Lee, Bobby Ferguson, then Charlie Woods came. We had Ron Gray, who was a big character. Ron Gray said that I was a frying pan signing because I lived in the little council house with my mum and dad, and there was a tiny wee kitchen, and they put the form on in the little unit right next to the frying pans. So Ron called it was a frying pan signing.
So he came all the way up to Scotland to get you to sign the forms, did he?
Yes, he did. Ron, there was another boy called George Finlay, who was the chief scout in Scotland, who brought a lot of good players like Johnny Wark and Alan Brazil. So that was the start of the frying pan signing, and progressed through the youth team, and it was very competitive in South East Counties.
Yeah.
Which really was tough, but it was very enjoyable. I would say the first 6 months, there was no doubt I was homesick. I had the other Scottish boy with us who helped. But this first 6 months, as a 15-year-old, and I had other problems, nobody could understand a word I said. Now I've lost my Scottish accent, being a stiff-up boy.
We've knocked the edges off slightly, yeah?
So, yeah, that bit, the football-wise, it was great. I love football. I love training, and I really enjoyed it. And things were going quite well on the field. But, yeah, initially it was difficult to settle.
Yeah, cool. Understandably at that age, isn't it? So, as you say, you played South East Counties League for a season or two, but...
I was very lucky because I won the South East Counties Player of the Year. One big disappointment I had, it was presented to us in London, and Bobby Moore was supposed to be coming and present me. That was in 1973. But unfortunately, he couldn't make it. So that was a disappointment. But, I was very pleased to win that prize. I think I'm the only kid from Ipswich had won it. So that was a big honour for me.
Well, to win that in 1973, you must have been 17 years old. Yeah, because that's... And then 1973, obviously, is when you started to make your way into the first team, and a bit of a baptism of fire, was it, for your debut?
Yeah, I mean, I had been playing the reserves, and Charlie Woods was in charge, and Charlie had got on very well with, and he was promoting me, and there was a few injuries. I think Jeff Hammond had been in the team because I think Mick Mills and people was injured. And then all of a sudden Bobby said to me on the Thursday evening, I think, bring your stuff in to stay overnight because you'll be travelling with us to Manchester. And I thought, oh, okay, it'd be nice just to travel. I mean, I was only 17, Old Trafford, all the well-known players, the fantastic international players they had. So then on the Friday morning, he says, how are you feeling? Well, I feel good, enjoyed the training with the pros. And he didn't used to do much on a Friday morning. We actually used to use spikes, nobody believe, for sprinting. And I loved that because I loved that because it was fairly quick, and I really love running. So that was different from there. So he said, by the way, I don't know, is your parents coming to the game? I said, well, it's a long way, Bobby. I mean, they've only got a little car. It'll probably take them 5 hours. Oh, well, just tell them that you're going to start the game you'll be playing. That sort of... So I told them, and, travelled up on the Friday for the game on the Saturday.
Yeah.
So come Saturday, we got just to the ground, and the coach stops, and I can see Bobby walking up the bus for me. He said, George, is your parents here? I said, yeah, I phoned them, Bobby. It was going to take them 5-6 hours because the roads are not very good then to Scotland. Okay, where are they? And I said, well, I've just spotted them. They're just over there. I said, fine. So he got out the bus, walked over to my parents, says, Mr. and Mrs. Burley, there's two director's box tickets to watch your son today. And that just summed them up. And, that was, for me, it gave me such a high as well for my parents to be there. So, couldn't have been a better place to make your debut.
Fantastic. And it couldn't have been against a better player?
Yeah, well, Joe's best than everybody. I mean, but it's 17-year-olds. Oh, I had no fear. I'd one of these out, let me out there. You know, that's how I felt. And and I went and played. I'm sure I was nervous, but it was, I just think, right, let me out. That's what I want to do. I knew I was quick and I knew I could get up and down the field, whether I could cope with the talent. Lucky for me, maybe Joe's best. Yeah, it was one of his last games. And I always say, yeah, I did quite well. He only nutmegged me 3 times during the game. So I did okay.
But then after that game, you barely missed a game. Well, you played every match apart from one for the rest of that season.
Yeah, I mean, that's something I always tell, you know, look at managers and players. And I'm sure there was times where during that spell, or maybe having a bad game or nothing, but Sir Bobby believed in you and wanted to work in the training grounds. And if things didn't maybe go quite well, he said, or Bobby Ferguson or Charlie Woods or Cyril Lee, would say, yeah, we've got to work on that. And you learned yourself, you knew the things you had to work on, and you got better. So that was the support you needed. So, you know, I didn't say I played badly every game, but but as I say, it was great. So there was that continuity and continual improvement, which was built up in Ipswich, and that's what we believed in. Every day, you know, Bobby Ferguson says, well, you know, think about your game. Where did it wasn't perfect? If your left foot or your head in or that wasn't right, Monday morning, that's where it starts. That's where you actually improve it for the next game. And that is what the last game's over. The next game's the most important.
It's not just talking about number of matches, really. It wasn't just that season. It's every season now for the next 7-8 seasons, yourself and pretty much the majority of the squad are playing 40-plus games each year. How did everyone manage to play so many games with no sports science and sports scientists and performance people tracking your every movement on a pitch and things like that? How did we manage to just churn out so many matches as a unit?
Number of factors. Every factor is very important. Mentally, you've got to be tough, you've got to be strong, you've got to have the desire, you've got to have the dedication, you've got to have the belief, that's got to come. Then you've got, you know, the fitness side to keep that up. I used to, you know, go out in the afternoons, you know, and I was a fullback, and I loved to go up and down. As soon as Paul Cooper got the ball, I was off, or I was up and down, and I was a very quick breaking quickly from the back. Yeah. So I used to have a weight jacket, which we had in the club, and 2 or 3 afternoons a week, I used to go out in that one practice ground we had. You know, you look at the practice areas or the training grounds they have now. I can't believe that we had 3 teams and we only had 1 area in the park across the road and all 3 teams trained in that. So I used to work in the afternoon at my sprinting. I go right box to box and do that for 30 minutes, 2 or 3 times a week. So that kept the strength and that belief. I remember speaking to like John Barnes once. He said, John, he said, I hate playing against you because I'm always chasing you. I never get the ball because I'm always chasing you back the way. So I felt that was the way to go. Let the winger work, worry about me. And then because I had put it into the training ground. And Bobby Ferguson used to always say, put it in the bank, because once you've done all that in training in the bank, you go out in the field feeling better, feeling stronger than your opponent. So it was a continual thing for the team. The whole team was the same. And you know, when I was a manager, whatever, you hardly see people after training doing extra. I think, what's going on here? Because we used to spend, because a manager can only do so much in a coach. Then after the group sessions, it's up to you to say, hang on, I need to there. You know, and you talk about Paul Mariner, bless him, whatever. I used to say, Paul said, right, just, you know, straight balls into me and bang, his control was unbelievable because he worked at it. You know, and I used to be quite a good passer ball because I worked at it. Yeah. Sometimes about 30 minutes earlier, we had a big board at the training ground, just hitting right foot, left foot, just practicing it. So you take that on So all those factors, you know, had to be there to make a top class side for the team. And when you look at the players, look at the internationals in that team, it was second to none. And that wasn't all natural. That wasn't big signings and players who were fantastic. It was a group of players wanting to improve and get better.
Work hard, yeah. Well, you say about it being a top class group of players. You finished fourth in your first season as a after your debut, and then the following season, I think we finished third behind Derby and Liverpool. And famously, if it was 3 points for a win, we'd have won the league. And lost in the semi-finals of the FA Cup to West Ham. But you were now part of furniture. So do you remember much about the West Ham replay, I think it was, we lost?
Yeah, I think I was struggling for the first game with my ankle, but I played, and Bobby said, you shouldn't have played, because, you know. But I remember the replay, and I think Chelsea wasn't my favourite place to play at, and it was a close game, but the decisions went against us that day. Yeah, no doubt. I think Brian Hamilton keeps talking about it all the time. I think it was handball, and he didn't actually handle it. But it never happened. And it went close at that period. It'd been great to get a bit farther. But we were competing, and we're very unfortunate not to get there. I think, was it the West Ham ended up winning it? Was it against Fulham in the final? I think it was a game where you would expect to win the final, and unfortunately it wasn't for us. But again, we were thereabouts, cups and leagues every season.
And you know, you're 18 years old in that year. You know, you played 44 matches for a team that's finishing third and getting to the semi-finals of the FA Cup, and then the following year it's sixth, the following year it's seventh. So these aren't flash in the pan occurrences, but just taking it forward a couple of years then. So when you were 1976-77, you won Player of the Year as a fullback in the team which had just finished third in the first division. And you said earlier about your playing style. I thought attacking fullbacks were a modern Jurgen Klopp. I thought Jurgen Klopp invented those, didn't he?
No, I mean, the game's progressed. There's no doubt about that. But formations, people think, oh, everybody used to play 4-4-2, everybody played the same way. No, that wasn't happening. As I say, Bobby Robson was, you know, advanced of his time, and so were the coaches. You know, and for example, you know, we move things around, like Eric Gates. I mean, Bobby Ferguson loved Eric Gates, but I know he's doing them. But Eric Gates had some great qualities. But he wasn't just an ordinary midfield player. He was one of these who could score your goals, but maybe defensively wasn't great. But he was terrific with the ball to feet. So we engineered a system with somebody playing off the strikers, you know, which, you know, it's like, well, you never did that then. We started that years ago. So, you know, they were clever the way we did it. We kept in front of people, you know, and we didn't have masses of small squad. I looked at it, you know, the other day, and I think from the UEFA Cup or the squad, I think we had nine came through the youth system out of the 14, which is phenomenal. Coming through, the, you know, and playing in Europe every year, getting to cup finals, getting to quarterfinals, semi-finals. So, I think we were well advanced, but I think what really stuck out for me, how we wanted to work together. How we wanted to continue improving, you know, because, you know, you can do it maybe one season, but it's hard to keep it going. And under, you know, Sir Bobby and the staff and the players at that time, we did keep it going for a good 10 years.
So, you know, you think you could have played wing-back or these attacking full-backs we see nowadays? It wouldn't have been an issue for yourself.
One of my strengths, I think, was picking up and listening to things. You know, and Bobby and Ferguson and Cyril and Charles said, well, you tell some players, you pick up quick. And I was always that type of player. I wanted to learn. And if you told me something, I would look at it and pick it up fairly quickly. My strength was going forward. So, and passing the ball. Because I practiced it and loved to do it. Used to have, Bobby Robb said, you know, every club in the back had a sand iron, I had a driver, I had a pitching wedge, and had a lovely feel, because like the coaching drills we used to do every week, we'd do it two or three times a week, and which I carry on doing it. And actually, I was talking to Tony Mowbray the other day, and says, oh, Matt Venus keeps doing your coaching drills. He loves it. And they're not doing too bad at the moment.
No, they're not. Flying high.
So, yeah. For me, it's repetition. And I've been, you know, learned coaches, you've got to enjoy passing the ball. Enjoy it. If you don't get the players to enjoy passing the ball, they've got to enjoy things. Enjoy training. Enjoy passing the ball. You know, and it's like communication. Communication's that way. You've got to train them to communicate with each other. It didn't just come. You know, you get players, you know, one of the strengths of our club, you've got players and you're making them better on the training ground. You know, and these days they're showing them on, you know, their laptops and all that. I still don't think it's the same as getting out on the training ground and actually doing it with them and stopping them and doing it. And the repetition, if I look at any other sport, repetition's key. Golf, tennis, whatever. So some players, we're doing the same passing here. Yeah, come on. You've got to do it all the time. Does Andy Murray moan about doing a forehand or a backhand? You know, a Tiger Woods hitting a drive, you know, for 2 or 3 hours after he plays. The repetition is so important to get it right. And even like crossing balls, you know, I got a stage where I could do it in my sleep. I could find Johnny Walker in my sleep. It's rolled back to me, it's on Walker's head, and it's 1-0. You know, I could do it in my sleep. You know, and then once I'm a manager and I'm looking at them, I'm thinking, they can't do it. They just can't do it because I've done it and done it. Yeah. You know, I think I keep saying the only player I felt was better at crossing the ball than me is when I worked with Gareth Bale. That's me just being, you know, a bit cocky. But because I did it all the time, you know, it came easy. And that's where the repetition for players is so important.
Yeah. Well, it becomes second nature, doesn't it?
It is. You do it in your sleep.
Yeah. So you having won the Player of the Year in 77, the guy that won it the following year was Mick Mills, the other left-back, the left-back on the other side. So what was he like? You said about the, you know, the team that came through together, but was he the glue that held it all together?
Yeah, Mick's so mentally strong. I mean, he's one of these players. His focus is there, you know, whether he plays left back, right back, midfield. And Mick maybe wasn't the quickest, maybe, you know, passing the ball, not long but short, but he had so much confidence, you know, there, and that gave the team confidence. Because you go out there and Mick says, yeah, we're going to win this, and you might do some wrong, so what? Move on, you know? So he was very shrewd, he was very focused, and he was a really good captain, because no matter the way things were going, Mick was there and said, come on, head up, bang, let's get it right. And so he was a terrific captain.
So the following year, things tailed off a bit in the league, didn't they? 77-78, we finished off relegation. Lost to Barcelona on penalties. In December, obviously we more than made up for that with the FA Cup. But before getting to the final, were there any particular memories or matches in the run-up and in the cup run? Obviously, you know, we can talk about a certain goal at Millwall if you like in the quarter-final. But any of the others?
When we struggled to get through in the snow against Bristol Rovers.
Yeah.
Robin Turner ended up scoring, and we managed to get a replay play and get through, which you need in the cup, a little bit of luck. The Millwall one certainly comes to mind, but probably my best goal ever for Ipswich, and of course winning six, and we were dodging bricks and stones on the way off, so it wasn't so good. Semi-final was a terrific game at Highbury, where we won 3-1 with Brian Talbot. I can keep seeing the blood coming around down his head, and I was against Willie Johnson, and you know, it was a game where it was going to be tough. Actually, I played golf last year with Ron Atkinson, and Ron was the manager there, and he said to me after 5 minutes, the ball got Willie Johnson the ball, and he knocked it past me, And I and it seemingly said, you turned, you ran past him, knocked about the keeper, and Paul Cooper picked it up. And he said, from that minute, I thought, well, we're in trouble here. And that was Big Rowan. So it was nice of him still remembering that day. And I think, I remember Johnny Watt scoring as well, I think, that game. But I think that was a game where afterwards you're on such a high,
yeah.
You know you're getting to the final, you're travelling back in the coach with all the lads, and the bridges were blue and white. And then for the whole month after that, the whole town was blue and white, thinking about, yeah, we won the semis, we're going to Wembley. And that was it. Everybody was chasing tickets. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody wanted to go. That month before it was phenomenal.
And what your memories of the day itself, or the lead up to the day itself? You know, staying nearby and getting to the ground and bits and pieces like that.
Yeah, I mean, we trained a little bit. I think the day before on it, it was quite wet. It was, on the day it was sunny, but it was quite a heavy pitch. But I mean, from start to finish, we're on top, played some great stuff, could have scored goals. Remember, my header, we won a few headers at goals where Pat Jennings got this great big hand and knocked it away, and Johnny Watt hitting the bar and the cross, and Mara's hitting the post, I think, a bar. Well on top, and it was great for Roger Osborne, who's a local lad, salt to earth. Everybody loved Roger, such an honest lad, and coming on and scoring. So that was great for Suffolk and for Ipswich and for Roger himself.
Any particular celebrations afterwards? Was it pretty low key?
To be honest, everybody was shattered.
Yeah.
It was one of those, the semi-final was different, it was a different feeling. We're getting there. I think there was so much emotion, and it was a heavy pitch, and you put so much into it. We were back to the hotel in London, and really just a bit flaked out, because everybody was. We got there, we won it, and then you think, that was great.
So the following years, then we signed a couple of Dutch guys. I think after the FA Cup final, Arnold Muren, and the following season, Frans Tyson. How did things change from a playing style perspective, and how easy was it for the team to accommodate them?
Yeah, I mean, you talked about how you developed as a player or whatever, but we were a team, we were developed. And I remember Arnold saying after the first game, his neck was sore because the ball kept going over his head. So, once you've got a player like Arnold and Frans, and Frans was my partner, you change your play, you developed it, and there was a great, all over the pitch, both teams, you had partners and players you really work with. And you look at Arnold Muren from there, he made Alan Bazell a lot better player, because Alan was great with the ball over the top. He was second to none, finishing. So Arnold had that sandwich, in his locker to just chip it up for Alan to run on him, and many times you've seen him slip it past the keeper. So that had to develop to get Arnold on the ball so he could develop Alan Bazell and other players to keep you playing. And the same with me with Frans Tyson. I mean, I played with Brian Hamilton and Roger Osborne and David Geddes in the final on the right, where Frans was one of these players, you just gave him the ball. There might have been one or two players around him. You think, give him the ball, because he was so good at manipulating the ball, people couldn't get near him. He used to run at full pelt straight, and he hooked the ball round with his foot and go in the opposite direction, and the defender was still running. And it was fantastic, and that was great. And for me to be able to pass the ball, then go and join in, that was heaven for me. That suited my play, because I wanted to overlap all the time and I wanted to get forward quickly. And Frans and myself and then Arnold and the other players, they formed that great link. So we did adjust it compared to 78, when the Dutch boys, Sir Bobby and the coaching staff, would change their play so that you, to get these boys on, you know, on in the game. So your players, like, you know, those two and Eric Gates needed the ball to feet. So that's the way we played then.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And so, following year, I think we finished third again behind Liverpool and Manchester United, and obviously en route beat the famous Manchester United 6-0 victory at Portman Road. You weren't involved in the escape to victory, George. You didn't fancy the Hollywood glamour of the escape to victory trip in the summer of 1980?
Well, I could have done, because I was over with Scotland. We were over in Budapest, and Johnny Work was going and asked me, do you want to go? And, you know, my wife was pregnant, my first son then. So I don't think that went down too well. But, of course, all the stories, probably everybody's heard about Johnny Work's story over there, where he went there for 4 or 5 weeks with, you know, Paul Cooper and Russell and Carly and all the rest. And he had one line to say, I'll take the top bunk. And of course, Walkie goes to cinema, oh, only had one there, you know, whatever. And then he's listened to it and went, well, that's not my voice. He spent 5 weeks and then dubbed his voice. he got a few quid and had a good suntan after it. So he was quite happy.
Yeah, they had a nice time, I think, didn't they? The following season, obviously, is the 80-81 season. You'd played 34 matches by the end of January, and then come up against Shrewsbury in the FA Cup.
Yep.
You got what was then a pretty serious injury, didn't you?
Yeah, it wasn't a good time for myself, because I'd played, hadn't really missed any games or such there. Played Shrewsbury in the Cup. I think it was quite a wet day. The ball bounced and it sort of skidded off the surface over the top. You know, and I sort of moved back the way and fell with my leg under me from there. And I went down and, to be honest, I never have treatment, never had treatment. You know, one of those players where I didn't want treatment, never did call it treatment, but I stayed down. And I thought, that's there. So they came, so I got up. And we only had one sub to use then. We'd used it. So I had to carry on at the wing. And we played and we got a draw, and Walkie kept passing me the ball. I said, Walkie, don't pass the ball. I couldn't move. My leg was all over the shop. So then afterwards, about 4 weeks went by, seen that space with Nipsies and started. And when I kicked the ball, my knee was unstable, kept falling down. So at the time, Kevin Beattie had his problems, and Kevin had went to Cambridge eventually to see a specialist, and they told Kevin it's probably too late. So I went to that specialist who was recommended, called Mr. David Dandy, who was renowned as one of the best knee surgeons in the world. He brought the arthroscope to this country. So he examined me in there and he went, well, your knee's very unstable. I think you've, you know, torn your major ligament and cartilage and anterior cruciate ligament as well. But I operate, I don't think you'll ever play football again. I've used carbon fibres. I've stopped doing that. So we just cut your half of your patella tendon away to replace it. So got it done. You can imagine how I felt and go back in the car with my wife. But my wife, you know, said, well, See, you never know. So I had it done. It was, he torn cruciate ligament, medial ligament in there, so he repaired it all, put me in a plaster, bent plaster, in Cambridge, in the evening nursing home. And, and of course I was there and I had wire, so actually the team were playing in the Midlands. I think it was against Nottingham Forest. And the evening after I had the operation, so I'm laying there, and all of a sudden I hear this bus pulling up and people jumping out. And I thought, where's that noise coming from? And I thought, oh, that sounds like Maris. That sounds like Paul Maris. And the boys, door flashes open. I'm laying there. I've got a big plaster on. I've got tubes come out of my leg. There's blood all over it. And I'm laying there. Yeah, Maris. Oh, how are you doing? And he had this blow-up doll over his shoulders. And I'm looking, and then I'm, there. And he sits it down in the chair next to me. And I'm lying with a plaster and blood coming everywhere. And I'm going, I don't think I'm ever going to play. And I had to smile. And all the boys stayed for 10, 20 minutes and said, oh, I'm off. And I'm thinking, what are you going to do with that doll? So the boys go off in the coach, and all I could see these little nurses peeking their head going, hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. I thought, Jill, come back quickly, And Jill said, maybe we should go back. I said, well, I'm not going to carry that blow up doll out of the hospital, am I? Eventually I'm out of hospital. I see Mr. Dandy's physio called Harry Willis, who was a top physio. He said, I'll get you playing again. I went, wow. Yep. You stay with me. Nobody else is going to touch your knee. I don't want you going back to the club. You're staying with me every day up at Cambridge, 5 days a week, and we'll get you fit. So I was in plaster for 2 months. I came out, and it took me another 6 weeks to get my leg straight. And I walked every day. It was a difficult time for me, but I was determined to give it everything I got. And eventually I got fit. He got me fit. I went swimming. I went to athletics coach. I had treatment for three, four hours every day going to Cambridge. And I was out for 8, 9 months. So I got there eventually. And even now, they're 8, 9 months. And I was the first person to come back from a torn cruciate ligament. So it was a difficult time. The boys were great, but I had to concentrate on getting myself fit. Otherwise, I was finished. I was 25, 26 year old. And I put the work in. I had a great physio, great specialist. And I managed to play till I was 39.
That's remarkable, isn't it? Because, you were 24 when you had the injury. And as you say, it should have been a career-ending injury.
Yes.
You went on to play another 350 times after that, which just goes to show, a combination of the hard work you put in and the medical guys is phenomenal at that point in time, wasn't it, really, back then?
Yeah, I was the first one, and I got to World Cup finals in 82.
Yeah,
I was never able to bend my knee further back. So it wasn't, I had to develop it. I still can't bend my knee further back. But it's like anything, you've got your body's got to adjust to it. So maybe it wasn't when you have an operation, it's not as good as it was before, but you've got to work double hard. I never used to do a lot of weights. I had to do a lot of weights. I learned how to do the weights, which got me stronger, my legs, my upper body, so you try and compensate for it. After every game, I couldn't stand up because it filled up with fluid. So I used to have 2 or 3 days off to get the fluid down before I'd train again. So I had to live with it. I had to manage the knee, So if I didn't manage the knee, it got too swollen, so I couldn't play. So your body's got to adjust, and you've got to adjust to it. And then through, being very focused in life to get that right, I managed to do it.
Well, as you say, you played in the World Cup the following summer. You were out until November, and then played every game from that November onwards into the summer of 82. Actually, so what were your experience? You're at the World Cup in Spain, as you say. You were there with John Walk and Alan Brazil were also in the squad, weren't they?
Yeah.
You had three guys over the England squad as well. Any particular, well, not in memories of that World Cup, but international involvement in general? They had a hell of a team, Scotland, at that time, didn't they?
Yeah. People always ask me who was the best player I played against. And, it would be Diego Maradona. He played, which maybe is not too
popular. Yeah, heard of him. Yeah.
Basically, Terry Butcher. Bless him. 1981, I went at Hampden. He was absolutely fantastic. You know, he was so quick and strong, whatever. So, you come against him and watching Brazil, Brazil beat Scotland 4-1. They have a fantastic team. So it was a great experience and to be involved in the World Cup and play against people like that, Maradona and that. Yeah, it was, you're talking about the tops and it doesn't get any better.
That's right.
You know, it didn't get any better for me from my debut and being involved in the World Cups. So I've been very fortunate. And you say it could have been different if I didn't have the specialist to get my knee right. Then after games, I had to be really, with the fluid in my knee and adjusting my body to it. That wouldn't happen. So I've been very lucky. I've been very lucky in my life.
So once 1982 was the World Cup, so Ron Green was in charge of England at the time, and he left, and obviously Sir Bobby left to take up that position. And then you start to just see players starting to drift away and sign for other clubs. I think Arnold Murren left that summer. Then the following season, Mick Mills, Brazil, Tyson. And as a result, the league positions start to just drift away as well, don't they?
Yeah, I think every team comes to a point where people go and, you look at some Alec Ferguson with Man United, and it was the same way Ipswich. And then when your manager goes, things change as well. So that's the case. And, it's not always the right decision for players, but I think when you get to a period where you've been for, a lot of the players had 10 years, 12 years, they move on and try and, look at different things. And that's the way it always happens. I don't think you're ever going to get to Ipswich where with 8 or 9 testimonials. These days, it's 2 or 3 years to get sort of 7 or 8 players who have had 10 years service is phenomenal. And I don't think it'll ever happen again.
No. So we had, let's say, Mills, Brazil, Tyson left. And then the following season, Mariner and Walk sort of left pretty close to each other, didn't they? I think there's a bit in, I've been reading Paul Mariner's book and he's talking about them both handing in transfer fees, like meeting up and deciding a master plan to get more money, which sort of worked for them. But then you were 28. In 1984, 1985, we finished 17th, but you had 50 appearances that year. But we lost in the semi-final of the Milk Cup, as it was, the League Cup, as it is, really. I think that's the first time I've ever cried, or first and only, actually, time I've ever cried. I was only about 8 years old, and Steve Bruce scored, didn't he, in the away leg to put them through to Wembley. But I was looking at it. You had 4 matches in 8 days, and you played in each one of those. You played Chelsea, Sheffield Wednesday, Norwich and Everton.
Yeah.
In the space of 8 days, it was pretty hard game. Unfortunate for us that Norwich match fell in the middle of those games, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, the Easter period and other periods used to play a lot of games. And the pitches were so heavy.
Yeah.
The fibre sand they have these days keeps it firm. But in those days it was firm. But we did it. It's amazing. We didn't have the sports sciences to tell you shouldn't be playing. You shouldn't be doing that. These days, they'll look at your performance and that, thinking, oh no, he's his energy's running out. He might get injured. You didn't have that then, which I suppose it could be a good or a bad thing. But we got on with it and played, and you think, if you're a fit lad, you can recover.
But then you hear it even now, don't you, that players would far, far more play games than they would train, wouldn't they?
Yeah, it's not ideal. I mean, you might not be quite as sharp. Still got a wee bit heavy legged or whatever from if you're playing in such a small space of 3 or 4 games. But that was the fixtures. You know what you're going to do, and that was how you had to do it then. Sometimes. here at the moment because of the way the fixtures are structured. If you get one or two crowd off, they have got to play two or three games in maybe a week, but that's something you've got to live with.
And then 1985, you moved up to Sunderland, and you were 29 years old when you left, but you still played another 200 times after you left Ipswich. Did you have any other chances to move elsewhere before Sunderland came in?
No, I mean, I was happy with Ipswich, but when you have a number of players that move away, and I came from when I was 15, I had my testimonial when we played against Aberdeen, and there was a lot of changes going on, and actually thinking, well, maybe for the future, if I move somewhere, it would help, and I was looking to get into the coaching side as well. So that was the first time, and I mean, I remember speaking to Southampton before Sunderland. That didn't come about, and Eric Gates had went to Sunderland and decided to go there.
I say, then you had a short spell at Gillingham and Motherwell and Ayr, we'll talk about that later when you started to make that change into management.
Yes. But
just taking it back to the squad, I think I can't remember. I read somewhere that Sir Bobby sort of said he had three teams, in that he had his 1975 team, his 1978 team, and his 1981 team. Is there would you say there's a better or a best group of players during your time at Ipswich? Is it definitely the 81 team?
I mean, how do you class better?
Yeah.
I always say that a manager's results are the prime importance. Of course you want to play football, but everybody wants to play football. So I think you've got to look at results as far as league and that concerned, and resources. Ipswich's never had much resources, so Bobby didn't, and so they say different altogether. From a technical point of view, of course, bringing the Dutch boys in, it improved it that way. There's no doubt about that, and I think from the spectators to watch, when you brought the Dutch lads in, I think it was better to watch, but you still can't take away from the 78 team, which was different, and the 75. So they're all good because they all had good results. And to keep Ipswich up in the top 36 over those years was fantastic.
So just in terms of, you said about not having the resources, Sir Bobby famously only signed 18 players in those 13 years he was in charge. So in terms of, and Paul Mariner talks about it in the book, the camaraderie and the team spirit, you guys must have just almost been like brothers, because there was such little change from year to year that it was a very large core of players who went through together. And, you're still all friends to this day, aren't you, with the reunions and bits and pieces like that?
Yeah, I mean, as I said previously, when you look at the squad, the number coming through the youth policy was fantastic. But you've got to look at Bobby's record of signing players. Because when he saw Brian Talbot, I think Brian was a really good player for us, great energy, and they brought Murin and Tyson in. I think Brian went for about 450,000, and Murin and Tyson came for about 350,000, 400,000, and he swapped John Podelity and Terry Austin for Paul Mariner. So, I mean, that's fantastic. But the basic crux of it was the youngsters. And Bobby always wanted to do that. That's why coming at a really young age, the club couldn't do enough for you. Because Bobby realised, that was going to be probably his best players, and where most of the players are going to get into the first team if they were going to succeed. And that structure worked really well. And he just added one or two to it. And then, of course, all the work in the training field. So it's not just one little area. It's great youth policy, working hard in the training ground to make them better, and bringing in players which are going to improve you.
In terms of your playing career, you said about Maradona being a difficult opponent. Are there any British-based opponents that you thought, crikey, we've got weather at the weekend, this might be a tricky one.
Yeah, actually, I watched Brian Clough and Netflix and all that, and there was Good Food Forest and John Robertson. He loved John, and John was a very difficult player to play against because he was clever. You know, he was intelligent. He could come short. He could go inside. He could go outside. Wasn't the quickest, but he moved the ball quickly. They played some good football. You had people like Tony Woodcock running in behind you. So some people like John Robertson was a very difficult because if somebody just quick, you maybe given them a yard or one-footed. You say, right, I know he's going one way. John had the lot as far as being intelligent, using the ball, coming and joining in, going left, going right, and he was very successful on a very good Nottingham Forest side.
Fantastic. And by the same token, are there any players you played with, and any non-obvious ones, maybe that you thought would make it big or to international level and didn't? Not necessarily just at Ipswich, but over your whole playing career.
I mean, when I was player, if you look at the squad, it was 14 internationals. So you can't say that none of them, underachieved, because actually, even Kevin Callan, when he came, was an international. Kevin was more a sub than he played, and he was an excellent winger.
So we better pick Paul Cooper then, yeah, better we?
Well, Coops, he's. He definitely, I mean, when you look at now, he would be even better. Because when you did your practice and your passing drills, Coops was one of the best.
Yeah.
He had a lovely left foot, you could spray it about in there. I mean, when you watch, the football then, the big difference is you used to be able to pass it back to the keeper and he picked it up. So if you're under pressure, if you watch the cup final, he picks it up. So you think, then you kick it, so you could waste a lot of time. But not now. But as I say, Paul Cooper, with his feet, was tremendous. So he would be even better. But Paul wasn't tall, but he had great spring. And I could see, you think, well, do a gamble to go quickly. I knew Paul was going to catch it. As soon as Paul was catching it, he knew I was going to be vixed on the halfway line. And then whoosh. So that worked as a counter-attack from the goalkeeper. So you see that going on for him. But Paul, was very unfortunate not to get an international cap.
Had a couple of decent keepers ahead of him, though, didn't he? I suppose Shorten and Clements of that
sort. Yeah, well, very difficult. I mean, that was the problem. We had talked about like Richard Wright, who's international, went to Arsenal. I wanted him to stay, but he had a figure in his contract he could move, and then he goes to Arsenal. David Seaman, who he thought was going to retire, didn't retire. Hardly played for a game for 2 years and didn't get any football. And Richard at 21 was a full international with Ipswich, and he was a big loss. So that shows you that it's very important that you can get there, but if you make the wrong move, it can sort of stumble your career.
Yeah, perfect. Well, I think we're almost done, but we can't really not talk about Sir Bobby just in general. Obviously, you've been talking about him all the way through, but as I said before, I've just finished reading Paul Mariner's book, and as expected, he couldn't speak any higher of the guy in terms of not just as a player, but actually after retirement, and he's not the only ex-player to say the same, to a man you all do. What were his main attributes as a manager? Paul Mariner talks about his detail and preparation, but his man management was second to none, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I spoke about what he did in my debut.
Yeah.
For me, it was his enthusiasm. I mean, when you walk into a room with Bobby, bang, he's off. He's talking about football, he's excited, and everybody stands up, and listens to him, I think coaching, left a lot to the other coaches on the training ground. Because it's important, when you get older as a manager, it's better you step back and have a wee look at it. As a younger, you want to do everything. But it's full time you're there. But his enthusiasm for games and hated losing, and he just wants you to go out there and give it everything, give it everything in the training ground. He wants you to be lively and sparky. And and be totally focused to get better. And his knowledge of the game, we've talked about the way he played, you know, 75, 78, knowledge of the game, how to adjust to players. You know, when you've got a squad of players, you know, it's not black and white. You've got to adjust to them. You know, and it's seen so much, even in Portman Road now, that you've got good players and whatever, but you haven't adjusted to it. You've got to adjust to get the right coordination between people to play. And that's what Bobby did. His signings were fantastic, and the way he developed his teams. So he thought, all right, that's got to change. All right, we'll put, you know, Eric Gates there and that there, or get Tyson Muir in there. So he adjusted his team. Oh, how are we going to get better when I've got the job? I've got to go get this youth policy right, bring the best young players in as we can, treat them well, let's promote them, give them a chance, you know, make them improve. And that was all the way through in Ipswich. He did that, which was phenomenal. And he had good coaches in that. And, you know, he made it fun in there. And always, every pre-season, we'd go on tour. And end of seasons, we used to go on tour. You know, he'd take us to, I think he went to Hawaii and Israel and all that. And, you know, the coaches were good. And we had some laughs and that. And the characters, and you know, Bobby Ferguson was a character. And I remember when we went to Israel, and Bobby loved the sun, and he was there, and he used to do his karate against the waves, and the boys used to laugh at that. And then, you know, we were having dinner, and Bobby said, oh, I think it was Brian Simpson, the physio, Brian, I've had too much sun, is there anything you can give me for it? He said, well, there's some calamine lotion there, you know. So fine, so Bobby takes it up to the room, and he comes down in the morning and says, oh, Brian, I feel bad. What about I said, that calamine lotion tasted rubbish. It made me a bad stomach. So the boys were going, he didn't drink it. Oh. So, but I mean, we'd great characters, and, you know, you're talking about big characters in the dressing room, you know, Maris and Butch, and, you know, so there, Alan and the Beat. So, you know, we'd big characters and really... people who wanted to work hard to win games.
But that's not created by accident, is it? You know, having those particular characters who, you know, blend in a certain way, that's a skill in management in itself, isn't it?
Most important, because a group of players means nothing if they're not, you know, playing to their strengths. Bobby used to do what you're good at, you know, and then he would organise it there. You know, you've seen so many squads, you're thinking, that's not right. This balance is not right. So, you know, it's like a jigsaw puzzle. And people think it's easy. You know, I think, oh, well, that can just do that. It's not like that. Football's not like that. You've got to be able to get players who are going to work together in whatever formation. And there's not a bad formation. The formation is right for that squad, might not be right for the other squad. So Bobby managed to work that one out for his squad of players, and that player that comes in will do a job there. So it's not black and white. It's you've got to have, for me, you've got to have the eye for it, the eye for a player, the eye for saying that system's not right for that, or what he's doing it wrong. You know, and you can have all the computers and all the stats you do, but unless you've got that eye, trained eye for players and done it on the training ground. We were a passing team. So what did we do for training? We did loads and loads of passing. And that was, I think, when people watched Ipswich Town, were good passers of the ball. Because we did it, you know, doing it week in, day out, doing it all the time.
Well, talk of Sir Bobby's management will lead us nicely into our next chat, in your next phase, the next phase of your career, the management side of things. So for the time being, many thanks for your time, George. It's been absolutely fantastic. And as I say, the next time chat will be about the management side of things.
It's the promotion run-in. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much-needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.